True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing well. We had some exciting games in the NBA last night. You know, it's always, this is quote unquote, I don't know if you know this, David, the NBA made a big deal. This is quote unquote rivalry week in the NBA. Now, rivalries are very difficult to sustain in the NBA, mainly because players move so many different times. And, you know, it's very hard to sustain that like it was back in the 80s, right? Or even the 90s when teams would meet each other in their regular season allotted games and they would play the same teams over and over in the playoffs, right? Everybody knows the story. The Celtics had a lock on the East in the mid to late 80s. The Pistons kept running their heads against them, butting their heads, couldn't get past. That's a rivalry. Then it was Chicago's turn, couldn't get past Detroit, butting their heads, and they finally get past. Knicks in the 90s, same kind of idea. But now, because of the nature of the league, talent being so dispersed, guys, you know, moving teams, you just don't, teams' fortunes rise and fall very quickly. Not as much as they did in the past. You know, they did that less frequently in the past. So it's harder to get rivalries. But anyway, the NBA says it's rivalry week, so it is. We had Nets 76ers and Grizzlies Warriors. I want to start with Grizzlies Warriors, because that was the last game. An entertaining game. Steph Curry gets tossed out the last couple of minutes for tossing his mouthpiece in the crowd.
Yeah, not because he was mad at the refs.
No, nothing to do with the refs.
Had to do with Jordan Poole, I think.
Yeah, there's a play where Jordan Poole, Draymond gets an offensive rebound, or someone gets an offensive rebound, kicks it out to Poole. Poole, and Steph's clapping, like literally right next to him. Jordan, nothing. Jordan fires up the shot, miss. Memphis grabs the rebound. As a coach, I know this is something you pay attention to. You have to be so aware of time and score and situation, right? At that point, I want to say Golden State was up 2. It was a minute, right? Limited possessions left in the game. No need to rush that shot there, right? Work our offense, get a shot we normally get, and then we can move forward. He didn't. So the running back down on defense, that takes his mouthpiece out of his mouth, throws it. All of a sudden, you hear a whistle. I'm like, what the fuck happened? He's getting tossed. I mean, that was kind of stupid to me. I mean, I get it. The rule's the rule. Anytime you throw anything into the stands, like, regardless, it's an automatic ejection. I thought the ref could have swallowed their whistle there. And it's something we kind of talked about earlier this week with referees. There's a position where you, yes, there is the rule and the law, but you can exercise some judgment somewhere, right? And maybe that was a spot they could have been like, we didn't say anything to you. We know you weren't saying anything to us. We get it. Don't throw your mouthpiece in. You know, maybe you do something. You give him a technical, but you don't toss him, right? Do something, but don't kick him out of the actual.
Well, so then change the rule. The rule. Because when you say the word discretion, mm-hmm. Well, that's what Steph should have had.
He should have tossed his mouth.
He knows the rule. But I think the bigger, you know, I've not had time to digest other people talking about this. I watched it. I had no volume on.
I don't know who said anything.
I had no idea what happened in the game. I had 3 screens going on. Did no clue what the fuck was going on. I saw him walk in the tunnel. I'm like, well, he has to go to the bathroom or he's out of the game. I missed it. But he's not doing that. Steph Curry's not throwing a mouthpiece. This is my opinion. No reporting here. If Clay takes that shot or Draymond takes that shot, there's something else. Like this was like the Jenga piece that the whole puzzle. I've never played the game, but it looks cool. When you pull the Django, it falls down.
Okay. Now,
this was that. And so Draymond chose to punch him in the head. I much prefer Steph's reaction, right? I don't blame Jordan Poole for getting punched in the head. I don't care what he said.
Right.
To throw your mouthpiece on a bad shot, although they don't take a lot of bad shots, but he takes some. Mm-hmm. And that was one of them in Steph's mind. That to me, something else is cooking. And so now, it's not just Draymond Green you pissed off Jordan. Mm-hmm. And so in many ways, Steph's a genius.
For sure.
Now you're going to have to talk about it. Like, I mean, I'm just telling you right now, executives Bob Myers has to think, do we have to trade this guy?
Wow.
I'm telling you right now, that's conversations happening. Or this is the more likely scenario, given they just won a title. You got to sit down, Jordan, with the team. And you've got to have that conversation that you can't hide behind the fact that a guy that's kind of known for being a hothead punched you completely, you know, in the wrong, has admitted how fucked up it's made the team. And he said the other day, we talked about it on Monday, where he claimed he couldn't even really do his job to hold guys accountable because he threw that punch. I think he was talking about Jordan Poole now. Now I think that's what he meant. Like, I fucking punched this guy in September, and now I can't do what needs to be done, which was metaphorically punch him because some shit that's going on preventing us from getting where we need to be. So I think there's something deeper happening, but now it's going to force the talking heads to get together, and it should be a good thing for Golden State, or he might get traded.
Interesting.
That's what I see.
So the Warriors end up winning the game.
Yep.
And Steph is
in Jordan Poole won the game.
Yes. Steph is in the tunnel.
Yeah.
Waiting for his teammates.
Yeah.
And that's not unlike Steph. That's right. That's who he is. When Jordan came in, Jordan fake throwing his mouthpiece he and Steph like hugged in the line tunnel, whatever. I don't know. I mean, look, you when you're watching body language and things, and you've talked to a lot of NBA guys, not saying that you didn't talk to anybody specifically about this.
I'm going to. I just haven't. Yeah, the game was late last night. I've been working all morning. I am going to make some calls just because I'm curious if there's something else. I've never heard anything beyond since the Draymond punch. Mm-hmm. But I'm just do the math.
You're just curious.
Is Steph throwing that mouthpiece? If it's the first time Jordan Poole has made that kind of mistake, I don't think so. I think it's the culmination of something.
It's also not like Steph to clap and demand the ball like that. I mean, I watch a decent amount of Warrior games. Maybe Warrior fans who watch every games will say that. I feel like if he does, it doesn't happen often. He rarely is clapping or doing the stomp for the ball thing. Like, I can remember one other time I saw him do it. I don't think it happens often. But it's something that bears watching.
So hold on. Finish your thought, because I want to finish your thought, and then you tell me if I'm right. What you're saying is, if Steph Curry is clapping for it, throw him the ball.
Yeah. Because he never does that. Like, that's not who he is. Like, I think I remember one other time him doing that.
Right. I definitely don't remember, but I don't know if you're right or wrong. I don't think you're right with the assessment that then you got to throw the ball to Steph. I understand why you say it. He's Steph Curry. I do.
Right.
I do understand it, Gerard. You're no dummy. But my thought is, if you want Jordan Poole to make 40% of his threes, he can never have to worry about that, right?
Well, that is true.
Right. Now, you take a contested shot and he's wide open. Well, now you have to come sit down next to me because we're not going to let you play anymore in this game, or at least not for the next few minutes. But that I think he was pretty open on the shot, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He just missed.
I think you got to empower that. Steph might have just been frustrated. I'm just saying, I'm not saying Jordan Poole was totally in the wrong for the shot, and I'm not saying Steph Curry was only reacting to Jordan Poole in that moment. I think there's more there. But these are easy problems to solve.
Yes.
Jordan Poole plays his ass off.
He does.
He does. And he's a very important part of any chance they have to win a championship. And Steph Curry knows that. Good luck finding his replacement trade him.
No.
That's not happening.
No. So that game, Coach, it reminded me of the Celtics-Warriors game last week. And I called you Friday morning and I said to you, David, how do you stop the Warriors? Because it seems to me every time down the floor, because of the offense they run, they get a good to great shot. Now, they don't make everyone because no one makes every shot, but they can always get into a quality offensive possession. Now, they turn the ball sometimes over because they're careless.
A lot of times.
Right? Because they're careless. But when they are just paying attention and they just run their offense and everybody's crisp in what they're supposed to do, they get a good to great shot almost every single time. And I remember you saying, you're like, well, you got to be disciplined if you want to stop him. Like, right. It's hard.
I didn't know what I said, but in my mind, I was just thinking, I hope I talked about discipline. Yeah. Well, the Jordan Poole play is very indicative of what it's like to defend Golden State. I'll walk you through it in a second. And I watched it this morning on slow motion. But the way you have to approach playing against Golden State is you've got to decide what you're willing to give up and what you're not. And so you have to make your decisions that with integrity, meaning this is what our game plan is. If I'm going to change on the fly, fine. I got to make sure we all understand what we're doing. Normally, you have to choose to take away the paint. So on the play in question we're talking about, which is this is a perfect illustration of what it's like to defend them in regular 5-on-5 action in the half court, not a baseline out of bounds with 4 seconds on the clock or whatever it was, 2 seconds. there were two guys screening. Poole was one of them. Zaire Williams, which I was surprised this young man was on the court, just as I was the play before with Kuminga on the court guarding Ja.
Jenkins says he trusts Zaire, and Zaire was top blocking in that situation, which is what he was supposed to do. Right.
So Zaire was top blocking, but I thought with the action they ran, Bane was in position to be underneath Jordan, and I thought they should have just switched, and Zaire should have just gone with whatever Clay, whoever it was, that peeled high, and then they would have protected the paint. Okay, this is why you set screens, right? Make defenders think. And you tend to get guys to freak out for a lot of different reasons or choose poorly for bad reasons. And you end up getting a very easy layup or easy three because of those mistakes that would not work if they didn't lead the league in touches and passes, right? And fewest amount of seconds, the ball's in someone's hands. All that is the Cuisinart, the dizzying movement of players and basketball, passing, cutting, screening. You just have to keep thinking so quickly on the fly, and you end up catching, like we always say in baseball, as I saw too many years with my son's teams, the ball is going to find the worst player. It doesn't always happen, but it happens too much.
A lot.
You can't hide in anyone. In good baseball, you can't hide him. He'll fuck up. And it might be they forget to back up first base, whatever, or the ball's hit right to him when they mess up. The NBA defense is the same. That's why when you have to play one bad player, you just can't hide it. You really just can't hide it. You can hide a net neutral player on one end if he's positive on the other, but if he's bad on one end, you tend to be exposed pretty good. And so I think that's what happened. I wanted to say something too on the play before, if you remember, Ja attacks, and I think Looney helps off of Brandon Clark, and Ja draws two, gives it to Clark for the dunk. And so we'll talk about the Nets game too. When you see those layups, wide open layups and dunks late, and in two point games that become tie games, and you ask yourself, how did they let them get that? Well, it's because they're making sure you don't get a three. That's a choice. So you may have to make a tough shot, make a great pass, whatever. But what you're not going to do is kick out for three, and now we're down a three-point shot, not a two-point shot. So they gave up the two. They're not going to give up the open three. And we saw when we talked about the Nets game that Kyrie had a sick finish, no help because of the same reason. Two-point game, stay home on shooters. The only way possibly lose is if they make a three out of this. We can survive a two. That's just something I want our listeners to understand is sometimes those are the easiest two-pointers to make. In fact, they often are when there's no help. You stay home on your shooters.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's an excellent point you made there. And, you know, obviously with him top blocking, with Zaire top blocking Jordan makes that read. Well, like, well, look, nobody, if he's top blocking, maybe he's trailing. It's a under the basket. No one is in front of him.
You had to wait for Bane to vacate, which he did. Bane went out to guard the three.
The easiest pass and layup you're going to have.
But that was a mistake. It's not a mistake when you're up three.
Right.
But in a tie, I think it was a tie game. Yeah. Tie game, 120 all maybe.
Yeah, or they were down one. So
I think Memphis just tied the game.
So they tied and then went up. Maybe it's tied. Yeah, it's tied.
So in that situation, your goal is to make them take the toughest shot possible. That's not the goal if you're up three. Your goal up three is to you give them a layup. They just can't take the three.
Yeah,
at least not a very well contested one. But in a tie game, I think you got to play what we call square. I think you have to stay between the rim. So it should be, we always say in basketball, on the court, ball, me, my man. There's the ball, there's me. I'm in the line of the line between the ball and my man. It's called ball, me, and my man. All right? It's a flat, we normally call it a flat triangle. So I can reach into the passing lane of the ball to the guy I'm guarding who's not on the ball, right? Ball is underneath the basket. It should be ball, rim, me, my man. Well, Zaire was on top of Jordan. So it was ball, rim, Jordan. Bane was in the way. And when Bane vacated up to go guard the shooter, Jordan got the layup. Still a nice play and made a tough finish, but that was just a mess up. Yeah, Memphis really blew that.
And, you know, conversely, I talked about how the Warriors' offense allows them to get into great shots in the half court. This is something we talked about when we said, you know, the Grizzlies are a championship contender. I don't love their half court offense. because it is so jaw dependent, which is great because he's awesome. Like he did, we drew two, got the alley-oop to
Clark. He is unbelievable.
But a steady diet of that for four rounds, I don't think is sustainable. And you saw a lot of it, the challenges they had yesterday was not having Adams to clean up the offensive glass, which he normally does.
What happened to him exactly?
He's got a PCL. He's got 3 to 6 weeks maybe. So
what is that injury?
A PCL in his knee.
Hey.
Yeah. So this is, and not only is he a great rebounder, right? Offensive rebounder, of course. He cleans up, they finish defensive possessions when he grabs the rebound. He's also, as you know, because he's a mountain of a human, an incredible screen setter, right? Like, and that, all those things that, like, you don't casual, maybe you don't see, you're like, oh, why does that matter? Yeah, a little bit more daylight, big deal between making a shot and not making a shot. And I think they're going to have some issues here. So I think in the half court for Memphis, there's some things they're going to have to look at. Ja's excellent in the half court. Bane has made strides as an on-ball creator. You know, one of the challenges I think for them is, as much as, you know, we love Tripp here and his ascent as Defensive Player of the Year candidate, I'll talk about his fouls in a minute, offensively, last summer being injured, you know, you can see it in his game, coach. Like, there are kernels of an offensive game in terms of jump hooks in the lane, different things like that, but the touch is just not there, and you can just see it's like, that's just lack of repetition. And when you're hurt and you have to rehab, well, you're not working on those things in the summer. I'm working on learning to walk again and then run. I have no time to work on that part of my game. And I think, because ultimately for this team to be their ceiling, which I think is a championship team, him as also an on-ball creator, right? Jaren Jackson Jr., that I think is crucial for them.
I want to revisit your discussion about Steven Adams' value to the team, but let me address this point first. So I just think he needs to be a better bucket getter.
He does.
Yeah. If he's Tim Duncan 2.0, like I said he would be, Tim Duncan averaged, this is pretty sick, 21 a game as a rookie. And then I think 8 of his first 9 or 9 of his first 10 seasons averaged 20 or more.
Bucket getter.
He could really, what did Shaq call him? Big fundamental?
Big fundamental.
But that really does, Shaq wasn't being a jerk about it, but that almost does a disservice to his ability just to also get a bucket. I've seen plenty of guys that were fundamentally sound, but they never got it past high school and they were good size. There has to be some degree of talent and feel. And so he needs to really work on that in the offseason. Not play pickup, work on full speed, getting buckets. That's where I think he has to go. I do. And then if you start getting good enough, now they start doubling you the way they do Embiid, then you got to be able to pass. Mm-hmm. Which he should be able to do, but we don't know. We don't really know. The other thing about Adams on defense is he is such a, I like to call it a paint mucker, right? He mucks things up defensively. So what does that allow Jaren Jackson Jr. to do? Go block.
Weak side block and just block everybody.
They're so focused on getting out of the muck, they forget about the gigantic Rodan looming in the horizon. Do you remember Rodan the monster?
Yeah.
So David Letterman. Remember his top 10 list?
Mm-hmm, of course.
He had a top 10 list once where it was like top 10 reasons New Yorkers are caught speeding on whatever of the million interstates you have in New York. And one of them was Rodan looming in the rearview mirror. As someone who grew up on Creature Feature with my brother Mike and all the different Godzilla, they were all my favorite, you know? I had glow-in-the-dark models of all these monsters that I built with my dad. I've tried to find them on eBay. They're gone now. But yeah, we spent a lot of time building these things. So here comes Rodan blocking the shot when you're dealing with the muck. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not going to be there now.
Right.
This is Horford does the same thing for Robert Williams. Mm-hmm. I personally think it's what the Lakers should do with AD at the four, play another big Wenyen Gabriel or Thomas Bryant. Mm-hmm. Play them both. Rotate them both. Let AD loom in the horizon. They don't have that. Tillman can't do that.
No.
Yeah, Aldama can't do that. Not even remotely close. Probably never could. And so that's going to be a big miss too. Jaren Jackson probably has to be a little more disciplined now. Because if he starts flying around, he'll just foul more. And you mentioned Bane. I have to say one thing about Bane. He was standing on the sidelines during the game. And again, I've got multiple TVs on, so I didn't know why they showed him. The camera showed him. I've been around this game, Jerron. You know I know a lot about this game.
Yeah.
But if you just showed me his picture and I didn't know who he was, which I would definitely know, I would think there's a 3% chance that dude plays in the NBA, but a good chance he's a lineman in the NFL. He's just too thin. He's probably a linebacker. Like, you would and I love that about him.
Yeah.
I love that we were so quick to judge packaging. I did with Ben Mathurin this summer. Mm-hmm. He's just not long. It really worries me if he's going to be a top level two-way player. I could be wrong. Desmond Bane's proof of that. Mm-hmm. Bane's, he's not a lockdown defender. He's fine. Mm-hmm. He's an unbelievable offensive shooter and great player. I just love that he kind of defies what did Vitale call the all-airport team? he's the opposite. Yeah, he is not on the all-airport team.
Big biceps. He can really shoot it. And, you know, look, Bane, this is, you know, we failed to realize, as good as the Grizzlies were last year and as good as they are this year, this team has one playoff sort of run, right. Not even a run, moved to the second round.
They
as
won
a group.
One series.
That's it. Yes, that's it. One. The year before, they beat the Warriors in the play-in, but that was the play-in. And then they lost to the Jazz in the first round.
Lost to the Jazz in five. Lost game one. Yeah. Lost in four good games straight. Yep. Mm-hmm. Last year, they beat Minnesota in six, mm-hmm. if I remember right.
Yep. And lost to the Warriors in six.
And then lost to Warriors in six, with Jabby and Herb. But still, they have one playoff win. You're right.
Right. So this
one series win.
They, you know, it's, again, people think, oh, Memphis. It's like, no, they need to go through these things and these scenarios. And again, I think when you watch that game, what you see there is one team in the Warriors' ability to execute, right, in close moments, intense, because they know, just run our stuff, right? Whether it's Draymond, Steph, Simon, whatever it is, run our thing, and we will get a great shot. Memphis, you can see, they don't have the, as you always say, reference points. They got a couple.
Yeah, I learned.
The Warriors got millions, right? Yeah. Like, they have millions. So it's much easier for them. Now, last thing on this game for these two teams. The Warriors still need to make a move, and we talked about that, if they're going to really lock themselves in. So, you know, which one of the young guys goes and gets packaged with maybe a pick to shore themselves up on their bench, who knows? And then if you're Memphis, we talked about this, you know, while I love Santi Aldama and Roddy and all these young guys, as you said, and John Conchar, these aren't dudes who, you know, are not proven playoff guys.
I don't think they'll be helpful in the playoffs.
So if you have a way of getting OG Anunoby or, you know, somebody that's going to, okay, right? Like, then these are things you got to think about, right? You give up one of those young guys and maybe a protected pick down the road to lock yourself into somebody who can really help you now. You know, so we'll see how that goes. All right. Moving on to the second game. Well, it was really the first game of the ESPN doubleheader. Right. Nets 76ers. And of course, this came at all the drama for all the reasons we know. The trade, Harden, Simmons, this, that, and the third. The first time they played, Harden, Embiid were out, and Maxey were all out with injury. So it was just the 76ers.
And they're good teams.
Right, right. And they're good teams now.
And Brooklyn just takes a bus to Philly the day before the game.
Exactly.
They don't
fly. They don't fly
right
now. They're right down the road, you know. And before Durant and Kyrie came, these teams, when Ben was a member of the Phillies with the 76ers with Joel, they had a contentious first-round playoff matchup in 2019, I want to say. So, you know, there's some history here, right? Okay, cool. So the game starts off. Both teams give up 41 points in the first quarter. Not a lot of defense being played. But you saw Embiid on a couple of possessions. And I know you seeking out whenever Simmons got mashed on him to get physical. And I think I told you this. The first time I covered a game with the Sixers in person, I saw, and Simmons was on the same team as Embiid, I saw them up close in person. I was like, oh my God, these two are gigantic men. And Simmons, I was like, Embiid makes Simmons look kind of small, but Simmons is not small. He's 6'10 and like, I was like,
strong
oh
as fuck.
My God, these are monster human beings. So Embiid, like a couple times in that game last night, like really went out of his way to like, get physical and try to put, you know, Simmons in the basket, basically. Every time they were matched up, the crowd was going nuts. Like, wow. Like, it was, I mean, Doc said after the game, like, it was a boxing match. Was, like, oh,
yeah.
My,
WWF like, oh, my, wrestling, yeah.
Right? Like, oh, my God, what's going on? All right, things settled down. I texted you and said, Simmons is regressing. That first half, I mean, David, it was like the first.
He
first
was afraid to shoot the ball.
Didn't even look at the rim. Yeah. Like,
he took one shot. missed a right hander, I think, right?
And then that's it. Every time, and literally his back was, every time his back was to the basket, not even staring at it.
Yeah.
Kicking out. I was like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
But then in the third quarter, for whatever reason, I was like, all of a sudden, oh, well, why can't you do that all the time? Right? Like, be that person. And they always say it. We don't care if you miss. It doesn't matter. Just do that, because that aggression forces the defense to do things now. They got to back up and think, oh, wait, Ben might score here. What are we going to do? Right? And I thought that it was an interesting contrast in him in the first half and him in the second half. And then when you look at Nick Claxton, who we've been raving about all season for improving, look, Nick is a skinny dude. Okay. He put on some weight this summer. Well, I mean, 8 to 10 pounds of muscle. He's still pretty skinny.
Yeah.
No back down in him at all. Going, listen, Embiid outweighs him by, like, I don't know, 100 pounds, maybe. Not that much, but a lot. Right. And he's super strong. Blocked him a couple times.
What do you think Claxton weighs?
230 maybe on a good day.
Okay. So maybe 50 pounds. Embiid could be 280.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, you know, so he's, you know, and he's just, Embiid's just a mountain and just a physically strong dude. But Claxton held his at a great game last night against Embiid. But I thought it was different, right? Like, Claxton also sucks at free throws, but he was not shying away from, he was every time going up. I don't care. I'm going to step up and do my thing.
I'm coming. Yeah.
Ben's got to have the same mindset, the Giannis mindset. Airball a free throw? I don't give a shit. Going to do it again, right? Like, there's something that needs to hopefully click with him on that end.
When I was asked going way, way, way back, I don't even think I would necessarily at ESPN, I was asked about what made Shaq special beyond the obvious things, but yeah, size and skill. And you heard me say it. It was his disposition to dominate. Mm-hmm. I'm not impressed when you're a big man and you want to be a bully in life. The impressive thing is when the guy's not the bully, not the big guy, and he's still the bully. That there's a leap of some psychological area that's impressive. But in basketball, I value it very much. And so Embiid knows he's the baddest motherfucker on the court. Mm-hmm. And Ben Simmons is convinced that he's not. And it kind of, it's fleeting when he does feel that way. Mm-hmm. Claxton thinks he is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you asked, if you and I played this game before, I just played it with my son yesterday. We had three names. Who are the three dudes? If you had a battle royale, which I don't know if they do that anymore. I was a wrestling fan when I was 12.
WWE, yeah, Royal Rumble, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so battle royale when I was young. Everyone's in the ring. Who survives? To me, it's three names, and I'm very proud of my son for knowing all three without even thinking.
Steven Adams, that's Joel Embiid.
Nope.
Oh, no Embiid?
Nope. Wow, Hell no.
Is it a little guy?
No. But he's not huge. Well, they're both about 6'6", 6'7". But these are bad motherfuckers. So Udonis, and I'm telling you to name him.
Well, because I'm like, guys who play,
So my son knows better, Gerard. He's not going to be visited by UD anytime soon.
Sorry, UD.
The third one is probably the most talented fighter, James Johnson.
Oh, well, yes.
When I told my son he can kick the rim, this was yesterday, he said, oh, then he's going to be on the list. I said, oh, he still can kick the rim, but he used to be able to kick the rim and land on his feet.
Yeah.
Like a fucking cat. Like, that's a talented athlete. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you have to have that disposition. And most of these players are so confident in themselves. And Ben just isn't.
He's not.
And so I'm glad that he did what he did in the second half. It was great to see. If you remember a game, you probably remember better than I do, when he was in Philly and they played without Embiid and he had like 30-something against the Kings. Just destroyed them.
Yes.
It's in him.
It's certainly in him.
It's the groundhog.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'll come out and see himself and he'll hide for six more months.
Yeah.
And it's too bad. Yeah. Because that kind of Ben Simmons in the second half with KD, I think they can win a championship. They need more front court help, I think.
Yep,
but they could find that.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get it. It's hard to get it.
And I think you hit the nail on the head there. And we talked about this on Monday because of the spot and the salary he occupies. Right, he has to be better than what he is. Right.
Right.
And right now he isn't, and that's a void for them, right? I mean, he sits in fourth quarters, David. Jock doesn't play him because they're like, we need spacing. And like, if you're not going to be aggressive, Jock said after the game, you are what you think you are. if you think you're aggressive, then you'll be aggressive. Then you'll do it. Like, and he is very clear. If he's not going to do those things, well, he cannot play.
I really think he's doing the right thing. When I coached, I was telling you before the show, I had a kid who Dean Smith visited twice. So it tells you how talented he was as a center. He's a Howard Garfield told me he's the best passing big man since Bill Walton. So it gives you kind of idea of how gifted he was. That's why Dean wanted him so bad. Mike Bray recruited him hard at Duke. He's at Notre Dame now, about to retire. And but sometimes he really struggled with confidence early in his career. And I trained him. He was one of my first ever students when I started this whole business. But I also coached him in summer camps and like AAU, whatever. We had those. And I wanted to yell at him. I loved this young man. His dad was a mentor to me. I loved him. I still love him. I'm still close with him now. Married with four kids. I would just bench him. And I remember one time, it was a big summer camp game, like a Lon Kruger's camp. He ended up going to Florida as a player. And he just wasn't playing very well. He wasn't competing. And I took him out like three or four straight times. Every time he didn't really give an effort. And I didn't say a word to him, though. I just took him out. And this was, you know, when you're coaching at a camp with lots of talented players, but we don't have any assistants, just us.
Right, right.
Like the last time I took him out, I grabbed him by the arm and I said, I'm just going to keep doing this because I'm not going to quit on you. But every time you don't play as hard as I know you can, you're letting them down. I have to take you out, but I'm going to keep giving you chances. And he looked at me with the sweetest eyes, very 6'10", handsome kid. And you could just tell he wanted it. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't happening. Mm-hmm. And then something happened. He had a baseline dunk from 8 feet, no dribble, just like soaring through the air, boom. And I'm like, oh fuck, here he comes. And then it was just a dunk fest and we won. It was great. And but then the next game, you never know until he kind of turned the corner. By 17, he had turned the corner. This was when he was 16. Well, Ben Simmons has long since grown. And so I think Jacques Vaughn has a way tougher opportunity than I had. Yeah. Like, when do you just say, fuck it? I'm quitting on this guy.
Yeah.
You know, he can't quit on him totally. They need him, but they need front court help in part because Ben Simmons doesn't assert himself. And we all knew this was going to be problematic. Mm-hmm. We hoped that they would get through it. And the fact that it hasn't, although he did miss a full year, right? There is something he said about still feeling it. But I think to your point, when you first opened this conversation up, you got to pay attention to the rim. You got to be a threat. They all are cheering him on for that. But I think he'll have a quicker hook in the postseason. And I think they have to assume he's not going to produce in the postseason. So they have to do some deals now in preparation for that. And not because Kyrie is rolling. Right. KD is, when he was healthy, rolling. Like Joe Harris getting better.
Nick Claxton is
Having a great year, both sides of the court.
Mm-hmm.
Not both sides of the ball. It drives me crazy when coaches say that.
Right.
Both sides of the court.
Right.
I think they have to have an insurance policy for Ben Simmons fucking up in the postseason.
So here's the question, and it's probably no because there's no value. Do you think about moving him?
Who would trade for him?
Well, this is your thing.
I played Who's that. Good? I don't want anyone to take him.
Yeah.
Doug Vaughn's a good dude. Kevin Durant's a fun teammate to play with.
Yeah.
I don't blame Kyrie for Ben's problems.
No, no.
This is on Ben. And if you can't reach him, you're going to have to own him to the last year of his contract probably.
And that's a ton of money to own that and get no production. And and they have a quandary coming up because right before the game, Chris Haynes reported that Kyrie's agent spoke to the Nets about, hey, it's extension time and staying. And if you're the Nets, it's like, okay, he's playing well right now. We got no problems, but can I guarantee this for four more years?
Where do they have the extension out to?
They don't. They have. There's nothing on the table right now.
Right. No, what I'm saying is they can extend him to like June. They have a while to do that. Maybe longer than that, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to make any decisions now.
No.
Yeah. And I wonder what they can put into the contract. The agent may not sign it.
Right.
But you can negotiate that ahead of time, like we're going to have some protections in place.
If they're going to get back into this business with him, they have to protect themselves.
Yeah,
they got to be like, look, man, you got to show up for, aside from injury, X amount of percentage of games, like, or like, you know, whatever those things
Stop
are.
Stop saying stupid shit.
Right. I mean, yeah. They're going to have that.
If we have any member of any community that has to bring a group of people to sit in the front row to protest you, your contract's voided.
we can't have that. We don't
offend giraffe lovers. Don't offend quiche lovers. Like, just play. I don't mind you having opinions. Just don't make it those kinds of opinions. You're allowed to speak out for homeless and whatever. All the causes you have. I think he's very involved in that.
He is.
Right. But that's also, I don't think he does it to wash his other bullshit away.
Right.
I don't think that's real sport washing in a sense.
No, he genuinely cares about
it. I agree. I'm sure he does. Nevertheless, you got to protect yourself if you're Brooklyn.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, guys, stay tuned. We'll be back to talk about a trade that was made. This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey, guys, Gerard from True Hoop here. If you had an extra hour in your day, what would you do? It's a hell of a question. Would you maybe go for a run, take a nap, read a book, or maybe show up for a friend? Now, depending on the day, any one of those would be a great idea. Most of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Now, I've been open in the past with you guys about this. I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I. And both are extremely helpful in developing positive coping skills and learning how to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/truehoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/truehoop. All right, David.
What? Oh, the retrade. Okay. Fucking figured it out.
The Los Angeles Lakers acquired Rui Hachimura from the Washington Wizards for Kendrick Nunn and some draft picks. And I remember I texted you in our True Hoop group chat, make this make basketball sense. And I mean, I get it, right? Rui ostensibly takes the JTA minutes, right? So he's a better defender, got a little more offensive juice. Okay, cool. But does it change, does it move the needle? Now, I know what you're going to say. It does if Anthony Davis is playing like he was before and all. And maybe Davis came back last night. So maybe that's the thing. So if AD is back and we don't know if he's healthy for the rest of the playoffs, LeBron's healthy the rest of the playoffs, and they're playing like how they've been playing, Rui will matter. Yes?
Matter in a sense of, are they better? Yeah. So do they improve their team? Yes. Not a big cost. I don't value second round picks. I think the G League's full of two-way players that are every bit as good, likely, as plenty of second-round picks. So I don't have a problem with that at all. I liked Kendrick Nunn. He was finally starting to play well, but they really had a lack of power of big forwards. Rui has been good on defense and then terrible the year before on defense. Bad on offense this year, very good on offense last year. Left the team for a long period of time last year for personal reasons that we have no idea what they were. He's better than Juan Toscano-Anderson. And so it's always good. So last night, instead of having two really non-impactful players on the court with him and Max Christie, it was just Max Christie. So they could survive just having one bad one. Mm-hmm. And Max Christie, I like his future. I think he's got a chance. But no way can he help a team now. Like, he's better than Juan. I don't think he's the answer. They have bigger problems. Do you have your computer on?
I do. Yeah.
What is Wenyen Gabo shooting from three?
Oh my goodness, Wenyen Gabo. Let's pull him up, shall we?
Yeah, you go to Dunks and Threes and just scroll down to the Lakers and highlight him, and you'll see it real fast. I don't know what he's shooting, but I think it's pretty good. And you'll get my point, because I'm going to talk about the Lakers coaches.
There we go. Wenyen Gabo is shooting 36%.
Okay, now look at Thomas Bryant.
Oh, I know. Thomas Bryant's shooting.
I don't know what he's shooting. I know he's shooting
44% from three.
At one point, it was 50. But between them, they're lucky to take one a game. And so here's my point. You've got a coach that claims he likes to play two bigs. LeBron has said he wants to see two bigs. You played the Spurs last night. It's AD's first game back. How many minutes did Gabriel play? Zero until the game was over. How many minutes did Thomas Bryant share the court with AD? Zero the entire game. How many threes they take combined? I think it was zero. Like, they're not doing anything special. They are very vanilla. And so Rui, I'm sorry, even if he was torching small forwards,
right,
he'll get three touches a game. They're not running anything special. They run their plays mostly for LeBron. I don't think that they have any shot other than if they get to the playoffs, it means they figured something out. Pat Bev is playing better, by the way.
He is.
Much better as a shooter, yeah. Although he could be traded tomorrow or today. So are they better than they were? I think for sure they are. I really do. If they get Lonnie Walker and Austin Reeves back in the next week, that will help also. But I would not buy a dollar of stock from them right now.
They still have a Darvin Ham problem. And
I think they have a coaching problem.
Right.
I don't think that. Russell Westbrook, did I say this on air?
No.
During the game, Russell Westbrook literally challenged one of the assistant coaches, like, you guys got to be better. LeBron had to break him up. This was last week. Mm-hmm. I'm not making this up or getting reporting from it. I watched it on TV. Mm-hmm. They slow motioned it, the Lakers channel. Like, what is going on? And it's very, no beat writer is ever going to ask anything about it. It's very quiet. Mm-hmm. But that happened. There is a lack of trust in what you guys are asking us to do. How do you have two centers that both shoot 36 and 40%+ and you don't run pick and pop at all? They might get a three on occasion out of accident, but you're not running stuff for that? What are you doing?
Yeah. No,
whatever. I have lost all faith in that organization.
Well, we spent sort of enough time talking about the Lakers. It doesn't matter, but it opened up trade season. Real quick, speaking of trade season, Dame Lillard had 60 points on 24 shots last night, something like that. Something very efficient,
like a record efficiency almost.
He was incredible.
He was amazing.
But you know, Dame likes the cash he's getting in Portland and doing his thing. But you think, hey, maybe his trade value could be high. Maybe they should do some things.
He's having like a career year.
He's playing really well.
And I said this months ago, I told this to Henry too, his speed is back. His burst is back. Mm-hmm. So you can't stand in front of him, which is one reason why bad teams let him shoot threes. Mm-hmm. And you can't let that cat shoot threes. You have to stay up. You have to press up and force him to drive into the teeth of a defense and make someone else make shots. You can't let him do it. The Jazz, I felt watching that game, I watched it today in Synergy, I felt like I was watching Sam Mitchell's Raptors against Kobe's 81. Like, guys, I don't know if I'm right when I say this, but I think Dame scored 20 straight points in the third quarter.
Sounds about right.
Like, what are you doing, fellas? I mean, are you not willing to pivot at all? I watched all of the baskets. I don't think they did anything. I mean, he scored in different actions, but there was no – I never felt like the Jazz were like, my hair's on fire with this guy. We got to find different ways. No, they just – it was just another dude. Sometimes it's pulling up from 28. What a surprise when Dame's hot is shooting from 30 feet. Come on.
What a surprise.
It's like Trae Young. Hey, you ever heard of the hamburger chain called Crystals?
No.
You ever heard of Crystal Burger?
Where is it?
It's like White Castle.
Okay.
They're like, they're famous for their small little sliders, basically. But
Rat burgers? Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, right. So a friend of mine once went to a Crystals and ordered Crystal Burgers. And the woman was like, Crystals? Like, she was surprised that I'm ordering the thing that which you're most famous for. This is Damian Lillard, Utah Jazz players. You probably should choose to guard him. If he beats you scoring 60 at the rim, well, then you failed to help. Exactly. But you didn't even bother to guard him to begin with. Well, that's on you. I call that being Sam Mitchell. So, because he chose to let Kobe do whatever the hell he wanted to do. Is punishment because he hated his team, I think. Oh, but, yeah, I do think, Gerard, it's a fair question. Like, Dame, you're really just going to – I mean, I know without doubt you wanted to get out, without question. Yeah, understandably so. You're allowed to change your mind and you got paid, and I'm not judging anything you're doing. But the Lakers could really use you. And they have a Russell Westbrook piece and two first-round picks and maybe some other guys. Like,
I was going to say, is that enough?
You can get rid of Nurk, who's got like 4 years left on his deal. So get rid of Nurk too. Get back a potential future center, Gabriel or Bryant, who are minimum guys, but at least you have them. They're in a contract year. You can re-sign them next year. They're young guys. And Thomas is 25. I think Wenyan's been maybe 24, 25. Maybe you can get Max Christie out of it. Like, are they going to say no to Dame Lillard over Max Christie?
I mean,
right. No. Or almost anyone else they have besides AD.
Right. Yeah,
you,
yeah.
And so I just, I'm surprised that, that doesn't, I'm not surprised we're not hearing people talk about it, because it means I do think they're probably having some conversations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That it wouldn't surprise me if the Lakers pull up something like that.
Well, what's the thing that we always talk about this time of the year? Agents and GMs are lying to us, right? Because everybody's got to try to position themselves. And the thing that you constantly are hearing about is probably not going to happen. It's the thing you're not hearing
that's
about.
That's what I've always said. I've always made that exact comment that it's so rare that the trade that happens is what you've been reading about until maybe minutes before sometimes. No one talked about Hachimura. I never saw it anyway. Mm-hmm. Never once did I see that deal. Doesn't mean no one talked about it. I just never heard it. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we've not heard anything about it. Maybe that's why.
No, for sure. It'll be interesting to see. Look, the trade deadline will be here soon, February 9th. So we got a couple weeks. A lot of teams are going to be buyers at this point, right? Because the league is so, you know, wide open, makes it sound like it's just everyone's bunched together, right? Only Boston, Denver, and Memphis, from a record standpoint, have pulled themselves away by three, four games from the rest of the group. Everybody else, a game separates them.
Well, on the bottom, you have Houston.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're terrible.
Yep. Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
After that, Orlando's, you know, Orlando, yeah. They could pull some trades.
Yeah. They might be sellers, I'm thinking, because they're like, all right, we know what we got with...
I don't know if the Orlando's... Yes, Orlando could be sellers, but also buyers.
They could be.
They might find themselves, and they know they've got a nice core they want. They can add to it a little bit. The Wizards, we don't know. You know, they've already sold one failed lottery pick.
Well, Kuzma's the name you keep hearing about, you know, which makes me think like, well, is it going to happen then if everybody keeps saying Kuzma?
And there's reporting I heard yesterday that the report was that Kuzma may be okay with staying in Washington. I listened to this maybe on NBA radio. I don't remember if it was a podcast. And I just thought, come on, guys. I'm not saying he wouldn't stay in Washington.
Right.
But of course the agent's going to put that out there.
Yeah.
Because he wants as many teams bidding as possible.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. An article came out today on truehoop.com. Great website. You guys should check that out. It is, can your team win the NBA Finals? Coach David Thorpe's guide to wildly differing projections from trusted sources. And it's funny, in our rundown, David says, you know, how I rate teams, it's about range, not ceilings. And I like that idea, right? Because I think that's how a lot of people look at it. Like, what's the ceiling for this team? Oh, they can be a championship team. Well, yes, great ceiling. But things could also go terribly wrong for them, right? And they could be something else. Or they could be in the middle, right? So there's an infinite range of possibilities for what a team could potentially be. And I think you also look at it from the standpoint of player development, right? Oh, can this player get better? And if he does X, this can make your team even better, right? Or he cannot develop, and then you got problems, right? So I think you look at it from a different angle. I want to say right now, the way Vegas, most of the odds right now in Vegas say the Celtics, excuse me, the Bucks. Let's see, who is third up on that? And then the Nuggets and the Nets, right? And that's around the Grizzlies, right? Those are your Vegas looks. And then Basketball Reference heads the Celtics, the Nuggets, the Grizzlies, then the Nets and the Bucks are a little bit lower down the list. David, when you're looking at a team and its range, how do you determine range when you look at a team?
Yeah, so the origin of that concept, in terms of how I'm thinking about this right now, it came up the other day actually watching a college game. Miami just waxed Florida State, and Florida State had been playing better. Miami's one of the better teams in the ACC. And Florida State somehow had a winning record going into the game, and it wasn't a competitive game. And I mean, I just told my son that your team can be, I don't remember what I said, but let's say it could be a 3 on a scale of 1 to 10, and it can get to a 6 or 6.5. And the other team can be, maybe their low is a 6 because they're a top 20 team, maybe, and they were in the final 8 a year ago, by the way. Mm-hmm. And they could be like a 9, and they probably played an 8.5 against you, and you guys didn't even play your worst game, but you're on the different. Now you can play tomorrow and be a very different game. Doesn't mean they wouldn't beat you, but teams are capable of playing badly, right? So when I look at all this kind of stuff over the course of a postseason, it's where are you typically going to live, and then what can you do to impact the other team so that they don't reach their potential offensively, which is really where the big variability is. in terms of shooting and just finding ways to score or getting fouled. And so the team that can pull off some wins, like I thought Houston with the in the James Harden years could knock off Golden State because they were taking 53s in a game. And I would write this at True Hoop even, because I think the last year of that might have been our first year together, True Hoop. You've got to 20, they make 23 threes in a game. When you shoot 50, it's possible. Mm-hmm. You're just not beating them that night. The Clippers beat the Lakers the other night. I told a player in the Lakers, no one is beating them in this game. They couldn't miss. And they have Kawhi and Paul doing the Kawhi and Paul things inside the three-point line. You're not beating them. That can't do it every game, right? That when the teams that can do that every game, well, those are the Warriors in the dynasty years. You know what I mean? So with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. So that's how I look at it is, can you pull an upset in a game? Sure. How more likely is it that you continue to play at a pretty high level where the other team has to play even better than you in those games consistently to beat you? And so that's kind of how I always have kind of looked at it. And my playoff record, I guess, has been good. I think that's probably why is I try to see it that way. And where are you going to live in this series as opposed to any one game?
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys definitely check that article out on truehoop.com. It's a really interesting way to look at it, right? Because in a year that, yes, it is wide open, you know, in many respects, like to David's point, right? The Celtics probably have the most elasticity, right? In terms of stopping you from doing what you want to do. And for them to be, right? Even if they play an eight and you're not beating them, right? Because six is your high, right? So you're not going to beat them. Right. So I think they're probably the most elastic team right now. And then, you know, maybe Memphis, but they probably got to get better in the half court, right? Golden State, if they're healthy and change a couple of things, they can get super elastic as well. So I think we'll see. As the trade deadline, I think, will change some of these positions for these teams. And then, you know, then we'll have the month and a half left to mad dash to the playoffs, and we'll see who kind of rips off. The next team to rip off 10 or 12 in a row, 12 out of 15, may, you know, solidify themselves somewhere in this playoff run. All right, as we start looking at the trade deadline, David, I want to look at three contenders and a wish that we might have for the three of them. First up, the Denver Nuggets. I mean, the big thing I think, of course, is defense, right? Like we want them to shore themselves up defensively. I like how Aaron Gordon's playing right now.
Yeah.
Playing really well. Of course, I know what Jokic is. Murray's starting to come on. Listen, everyone knows my basketball love language is Michael Porter Jr. type people. Not playing that well this year. So I don't know what we're going to do about that MPJ position. Maybe we trade him? I don't know. Probably can't. Well, we signed an extension, so I don't think we can.
Yeah, right. The only thing I thought about with them is I didn't go into the whole trade thing.
Right.
All I looked at was they need defensive help. And who can they get? And I didn't do this for all three teams. I kind of looked at more just what they need in general. But I think Nerlens Noel is available in Detroit. He can really defend. Mm-hmm. He's a terrible offensive player on that team. Denver team, I'm not sure he'd be so bad.
Yeah, it's fine because you got Jokic.
Yeah, you can play with him. You can play. Let him be the center. The Nuggets are faced with what the Sixers faced with Embiid back before they got Horford. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do when Jokic is out? Mm-hmm. And I'm not telling you Noel is the answer,
right?
But I'm telling you the guys they have isn't the answer. You've got to get an elite defender and just muck things up when Jokic is out. And I don't think that that's news to them. I think that Calvin Booth knows I've got to find help behind Jokic.
Well, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I wonder too, because Bones is dynamic offensively, but a big liability defensively in the playoffs, right? He is someone who, in a half court, in a playoff setting, if he's going to be on the court, he's someone, let's seek him out, right? Let's find him and isolate him and try to go at him, which is going to limit his minutes. So do they potentially move Bones to get more defensive help? We'll see. But I think, yes, defense for sure. Clippers, we talked about this a little bit before. They got to consolidate, right?
If
Kawhi and Paul George are here and healthy, cool. I like that. They need another big and the Reggie Jackson, John Wall thing, I think we can move on from that, right?
Everyone would agree with you.
Okay.
I think everyone agrees that Reggie Jackson and John, well, I say everyone, the people that I'm listening to that are smart are saying the same thing. I love Zubac, but they could upgrade him. I don't know how you would do it.
Can they get Miles Turner?
Probably not. Probably not. But the other thing is that they, I mean, I haven't mentioned this to Henry, but we wrote an article a couple of years ago where I wrote that Paul George should just be the point guard. He's ostensibly the point guard now, but they're not calling him that. Mm-hmm. Terrence Mann, I love. I think Terrence could be the point guard, but I don't think Ty agrees. And I'm not telling you I know more than Ty. He's coaching me every day. I've never met him before. So if you don't want Paul to be a point guard, you don't want Terrence to be a point guard, well, even though Fred VanVleet isn't really a point guard, but he's played that role. Mm-hmm. He's looking to shoot more than anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know that moves the needle enough, but you've got Covington. You've got, I don't know who wants Reggie Jackson. It's not going to be so easy. I'm telling you, I didn't think it was so easy to make a trade for them unless you trade Zubac and get a better offensive player. They could use offensive help.
Well,
paint scoring.
Here's what they have that they can move. Look, you got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard now who can next summer decide to opt out of their deals and become free agents. You got to go all in now. They have two future firsts. Yep, put those things on the table, my friends, because you got to win now. So what difference does it make? Yeah. Oh, let me try to. What was the point of getting these guys here, right? If it's not to go
and
for
they've that. Got a shot. I still would pick them in the West more than anyone right now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. So that's what I do. All right, and then we talked about this team a little bit earlier. The Nets front court help, I think is
I agree. Is where that's we exactly go. What I was going to say.
Can they
know that? Just so you know,
yes,
I've talked to agents who know. Like, they're looking to get bigs.
Can they get Kyle Kuzma?
Ooh. For whom?
Cam salary-wise.
Cam doesn't have that kind of value.
Joe Harris has to go, of course, for salary to match.
But yeah, the Wizards don't want Joe Harris. The Wizards don't want to get off of Kuzma unless they don't think they can re-sign him.
And that's the other thing.
Which is why his agent's saying, we're amenable to it. Of course you are.
That's the other part. If you decide to get Kuzma, is that are you sure you can sign him and keep, because he's going to be a free agent and he loves LA. So
right, exactly.
Now it's interesting, and you know, as we go, David, and we'll start talking about these more like the next couple of weeks. Just teams that we think, all right, what can you guys do? What do you need to kind of get yourself up over the top? Because I think that's right. Real quick, I didn't have them on the list, but do you think the 76ers need anything? Because here's what I wonder: Maxey and Harden are going to close games. That worries me defensively.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe they'll close with Melton.
Listen, you know I love. We missed the Anthony Melton in Memphis.
Yeah, for maybe they'll close with Melton.
So no Maxey to close, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they ain't worried about feelings. That's what the money will be for in the offseason.
Yeah, that's what the money's for.
Mm-hmm. I love my favorite quote now. I say it all the time to agents. That's what the money's for, and the players. Yeah, you're not going to get any nice lovey-dovey feelings from these teams. they're all in the Gerard Hector line of the world. That's what the money's for. That's what the playing time's for. Don't expect us. Someone sent me a note the other day. Henry might have. Where the head coach for the Thunder, I believe the head coach for the Thunder, is Mark taking Daniel. Chet Holmgren out.
Yeah.
Once a week. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, memo to all 29 other you motherfuckers. You should act like you don't even know their names, except in the press conference. We're just thankful you don't call them by the number like football coaches used to do, right? Like, they're human beings.
Yeah.
I had lunch with an NBA player yesterday, and he's tired. It's a long season. He said, I can't lie, coach. I'm looking forward to the summer, and his team probably is going to make the playoffs.
He's already looking forward to summer.
Yeah, I got him dialed back in. Like, yeah, he's excited to play again and all of that. But it's hard. It's a hard life. And a lot of these guys are lonely, too.
Yeah, they
are. It's a different existence as a young player without – I think the family guys have it better. I really do. Mm-hmm. Their homes are I don't want to go into detail because we're about to finish. But I just digitized all the old hamquarter stuff I told you about. Mm-hmm. Seeing our home with these two and three-year-olds, four-year-olds, and just it was a loud, fun place. These young NBA players don't have that. They have a dog, maybe. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying they don't have fun. Of course they do, but it's hard. Take them out to lunch, coaches.
Yeah,
show them you care about them as human beings, not just as players.
No, absolutely. All right, as is our tradition on Thursdays, we finish our show with top five. David,
what are you going to guess we have? Not like exact match. How many of the same teams do you think we have?
We have at least three. Three of the same five.
Okay. I'm gonna my number five is the Nets.
Nets are not in my top five anymore.
I get it. But I think KD's imminent return, although he's out two more weeks
to get reevaluated, and then we'll see.
And then we've All-Star break too. I mean, I'm probably wrong to have them there. They're definitely not a top five team right now.
No.
I'm just projecting out. I probably screwed up.
I probably should
have Cleveland at five.
He wants to play in the All-Star game. Listen, bro, you ain't coming back till after that thing.
Yeah, I agree.
We're not messing around there.
I probably should have Cleveland at five.
Number five for me. Light the beam, baby. Sacramento Kings.
I'm smoking that team out with the Cavaliers. I might smoke them out with the Nets. They lost the Raptors at home yesterday.
I know. They did have a bad loss yesterday. I know. But they're playing so good. They're playing well.
Third in the West, yeah.
Yes,
all right, number four, Denver. You probably have them higher.
Number four, Milwaukee. The Bucks. Yeah. The band is back together.
Middleton just got back. I want to see a little bit more.
You want to see a little more?
Yeah, I'm not impressed.
See, folks, Gerard gets excited. David's like, curb your enthusiasm. Let me see them play a little bit longer.
I'm closer to Larry David's age than you are. number three, my two and three are flip-flop. I have Memphis, but I could put Philly there too. I like both teams.
David, Memphis lost four in a row. They're not in my top five. They're out. They're out. Denver Nuggets, number
three. They've lost to good teams. Well, they had one bad loss. OKC, was it? They had one bad loss.
Yeah. And honestly, to me, the Warriors' loss is a bad loss. Like, Golden State,
they're good.
I know, but their inability to execute, I'm like, guys, we got to start making some steps. I don't like this. So I penalized them for that.
I think your list is better than mine. I have Sixers at two.
Celtics at two, because you know who's at number one?
Philly.
The Philadelphia 70. Yeah. Listen. You were on them all year, and I was like, I don't believe in those jokers, but look at Embiid, so good. No, Harden accepting his role.
Harden, he just is playing his role. He's doing what I thought he could do and not more. I worried about Embiid yesterday. He was really competing yesterday because of Ben.
Oh, he was.
And he looked tired. He looked great, amazing. But I think it's going to be pretty fresh in the postseason. But yeah, no, Philly, I get it. Yeah. If you did a 7-game series right now, Philly could beat them. I mean, no doubt about it.
I worry about the Tucker role spot in the lineup. And as I mentioned, but you said they'll probably just play Melton close. And defensively, you can't have Harden and Maxey on the floor to close out games.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think you're fair. I think that's right.
All right, folks. Have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the NBA action. And we will see you on Monday. Take care.